Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of our Pro Football Weekly TV podcast. I'm Hub Arkish, the co-founder of Pro Football Weekly, along with longtime NFL head coach Dave Wannstedt and college football and NFL Hall of Famer Dan Hampton. Now, while we're pretty much all pro football all the time, I want to just start this week with a college football topic that is driving me nuts and see what you guys think. The NIL, name, image, and likeness, I believe, is ruining the great game of college football and could eventually completely destroy it. These kids are already getting paid to play in college with scholarships that can be worth up to $100,000. Now, with NIL money being one of the biggest keys to recruiting the best players, we have no real idea where most of this money is coming from other than wealthy alumni. But we know there is all kinds of cheating going on, and it's only going to get worse as the competition grows. And how is it good or even fair to give these 18, 19, and 20-year-old kids millions of dollars they haven't earned a penny of yet? Dave, this is just my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think NIL is a disaster that will only get worse. And I'm wondering what you guys think.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I know that's why Nick Saban ended up saying, I have enough. You know, he made the comment to somebody that told me that he said, I can't recruit the same kid three times in 1 year. You know, and that's what it's really coming down to. Jim Harbaugh, I promise you that had an influence on him, because I talked to him about doing the Big Ten TV shows, and he was not a fan of it. You know, he's kind of the old school guy. So, you know, it's something has to come under control. I was at the University of Miami this morning, and I had a long talk with Mario Cristobal, the head coach there. And he told me that they are recruiting right now to, they can only have 80 or 85 players on scholarship, but they're going to sign 100 players knowing that there's going to be 20, 25 of those guys that ended up leaving. And he doesn't know which ones. That's the thing. The player doesn't have to tell you anything. He puts his name in the portal and he leaves. And it's not just the big names. I'm talking to Saban. This past year, a guy that I drafted, Hamp, you and Hub, you guys know him, Chris Valero. He played, made the Pro Bowl, was a good player, played 9 years in the league, an offensive guard. He's the head coach up at St. Francis, PA. It's a Division III school. And Division II school. And they can give 60 scholarships. So they're the next level down. And he was telling me that he's having to go into the portal, because he had 7 players last year. They had a very good year, and his 7 players left, and one went to Maryland, one went to a MAC school, you know, which are all steps up for these kids. So what does he got to do? He's looking at the Division III schools, and he's going to go get some of their guys. And it's a darn shame for, I think, everybody involved. And I don't know how it's going to stop. I really don't, but, I know what Greg Schiano, I talked to him at Rutgers, and he's just calling their bluff and saying, you're telling me you're getting $100,000? Good luck, go get it. He said, you would be surprised how many guys are calling him back saying, well, I really didn't get a solid offer for $100,000. And so it's off the rails right now. Hub, I agree with you.
One of the things that really, it makes me sick in a way, and it's just like, okay, are you going to pay your 10-year-old $5,000 a week to walk the dog? No, you're not. Why would you even? Why would, you know? And I got to tell you, it's all a scam, and it's all, you know, the intercollegiate, you know, geniuses that have had they've been at the wheel, and they think that now they own, you know, everything, and they can, you know, put all these idiot, you know, designs and concepts into practicality. And all it's done, it will. And it's only been around for what, 2, 3, 5 years now? Wait another 5 years. It will devastate. It will destroy the foot. You know, football is, it's a completely different game than volleyball or baseball. You can get killed playing the game of football. So there is a viable, you know, a part of it that, you know, you think, okay, well, we need to make everybody, we need to pay them a little this or that. But the thing is all ass backwards. And, you know, I played for Lou Holtz, and you might like him, you might not. But They asked him recently, what's the difference between coaching now and coaching 20, 30, 50 years ago? And he coached 50 years ago. He said, today kids talk about rights and privileges and money. And back then it was about obligations and opportunity. And the thing that I think, okay, there's a point, you don't get paid to go to college, but when you get out of college, now you qualify to do a job that you do get paid. So why were they, why did they, you know, it's just like, you know, it's almost like they wanted to steer the rig off the road, and they are down, they are way down the lane right now. I think it will be the end of intercollegiate sports here in another 5 years.
Well, I'm glad to hear that we all agree. At least now I know I'm not just being getting old and getting mad. It's terrible for college sports. I don't know that it's good for the athletes. And you know, I don't know what the next step is, but this is going to start to really continue to get worse fast. And in another couple of years, I'm not sure if we're going to recognize college football. But let's move back on now. We're getting ready for the draft. We're just a week away. It seems a lock that quarterback Caleb Williams is going to be the number one pick by the Bears, although there's still a very small chance they could trade the pick. But if they do, whatever team trades for it will take Williams. So as clear as that is, it appears totally unclear how the other 31 teams rank Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy, the next three best quarterbacks. Now, I've been on record for almost a year that I think McCarthy will actually be the best quarterback out of this draft with a very small edge over Williams. They're both going to be really good players. But I have nothing negative to say about Williams. He's a great prospect and will probably be a very good pro. I just see more that's truly special in McCarthy. Now, Dan, I wonder, how do you rank Daniels and McCarthy and May? What order do you think they'll go in? And will these four quarterbacks be the first four picks or first five along with Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Well, yeah, and again, I think we're going to see it every year. And obviously this is a terrific quarterback class. And that's why, you know, obviously everybody is kind of like, you know, charged up to the, you know, watch what happens at the top of the first round. Yeah, I think without question that, you know, and we'll talk about this at great length at some point about the Bears. You know, I was talking to some guys at the Hall of Fame yesterday, and Joe Horgan and some other folks, and I said, think about this, and Coach, when you think about the Pittsburgh Steelers, you think about all kinds of, but you think about Terry Bradshaw. I mean, it's almost like he's the face of the Steelers. You think about the Miami Dolphins, maybe it's Dan Marino. You think about the 49ers, okay, it's Joe Montana. You know, quarterbacks have, for, you know, Joe Namath is still like the face of the Jets. Well, the Bears have never had that. He's got, you know, maybe Butkus or Urlacher or Singletary in the 85 Bears. You know, this is a chance. First time in how many years? 20, 30, 40, 50, before I got there, the Bears have a chance to identify a player that they think can be the face of their franchise for the next dozen, 15, 20 years. Who knows how it will go. But I don't think there's any doubt that of course, he will be the first player taken. Daniels will be second. There's a reason why he won the Heisman. Yeah, he had some really great receivers. We can talk about them too. But then, of course, Drake May. And then J.J. McCarthy, you think he's the wild card. You think that the Redskins are you know, thinking we're going to have something up our sleeve. We're going to go with J.J. McCarthy. And you very well may be right. A lot of the attributes that J.J. Has shown, they have always, you know, kind of translated into. You know, it's like Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy was the last guy taken in the draft. And yet – those traits, those characteristics, those talents, those skills, he's, more than competent taking a team to the Super Bowl. We just saw it. So all that being said, I personally think that's when it's going to get fun. We're going to see where Penix and Bo Nix and Joe Milton and Michael Pratt, Carter Bradley, Spencer Rattler, all these other names. They could go pretty high in the draft, maybe if not first, second, or third.
Dave, what do you think about those next three after Williams?
Yeah, I like McCarthy probably third, and then fourth. You know, I would go Daniel second after Williams, and then I would go J.J. McCarthy, just because I think the guy's won, and I think he's capable of doing a lot more than what he did with Jim. And then from there, the guy that I would probably go with is Bo Nix. I mean, you know, and then probably Penix. I mean, it would probably be in that order for me, just because Bo Nix, guy started 61 games. That's hard to do, and he's a heck of an athlete. He makes good decisions. So, and I like a guy a little more athletic. So I would probably rank him, you know, after Williams, Daniel second, J.J. McCarthy third, Drake May fourth. A lot of people love Drake May and his arm. I mean, they love him. They say he's, you know, with that 6'4 height and his 4'7 athletic ability. And then after that, I would get into, then I'd go Bo Nix and probably Michael Penix.
You know, guys, the thing that is so interesting about McCarthy right now is the way he's impacting the draft. Because up until we started hearing from the GMs who are going to make picks, and we just had, you know, draft experts going on stats, they didn't have him, you know, with the top four or five. But if you study the film, you will see that McCarthy does everything that these other five guys still do. And he just was running a different offense. He was the only one running an NFL offense while the others were running the college passing game. And his stats just didn't measure up. And that's what got him, you know, thought of as somewhat less than the top four or five guys. And that's what's changed so much in the last couple of weeks, as the experts, the real experts, the GMs, are now starting to get forced into making decisions and figure out where they're at. So we'll see what happens. But we've been talking about the quarterbacks, wide receivers, and offensive tackles, the three best positions in this draft, it seems like, for a couple months now. And I think the wideouts may be the deepest group I've ever seen in any position. Now, like the top four quarterbacks, we know Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Roman Dunze are the top three receivers and will all go in the top 10 picks. That's the easy part. But there are at least seven or eight wide receivers with first-round grades and another six that won't make it through the second round. Dave, who do you expect to be the fourth receiver off the board? How many do you think will go in the first round, and which ones are your favorites after the top three?
Well, after the top three, and I'll keep this moving along here, it's a matter of what you want. If you want a slot receiver, Ladd McConkey out of Georgia, the guy is ready to play now. If you need a slot receiver, take him in the first round, and he's going to come in and line him up, and he'll play. I mean, I had Wes Welker. I've had a lot of, you know, guys over the years, the good slot receivers. He does all that stuff, okay? And he's faster. He's 4.5 or 4.4, I think, at the combine. So he's a faster Wes Welker type of player. If you want a big guy like Mike Evans in the red zone, take Coleman from Florida State. The guy I know doesn't run 4.4, but there's nobody that uses his body. He uses his body as good as Harrison or any of them in the red zone, going up and getting the ball. The guy can jump out of the sky, and he gets the football in the red zone. And if you want Deebo Samuels, the Jalen Polk kid out of Washington, that's how I see him. You know, this guy is 6 foot, 200, and you could put him in the backbone, in the backfield. I'm sorry, just like the Niners do with CD. Deebo Samuels at the 49ers. You can put him in the backfield like they do and pitch him the ball. You can put him in the slot. He's got enough speed to put, and he is tough as nails. So if you want the Swiss Army knife guy like Deebo Samuels, I would go with Polk. If you want the big receiver for the red zone, that's what you need, you go Coleman. If you want the slot, you go McCulkey.
Everybody knows, obviously, the quarterback position is so deep. The offensive tackle position is so deep. But what's really nuts is the receivers could be, you know, the most bounty of any of the positions on the football field. And yeah, we all know that, you know, certain guys are going to be the ones that go off the top. But there's a bunch of, like, stragglers at the bottom of the first round that it's like beauty in the eyes of the beholder. And, you know, we know that Malik Nabers is a special receiver, broke every record that Chase and Jefferson had at LSU. But when you think about the fact that those two guys, you know, obviously at the same time, same field, same quarterback. Well, same thing happened in Texas. And Xavier Worthy and Adani Mitchell, they are, you know, just stallions that, I mean, there's only one football, right? And still at Texas, you got to run it. You got to, you know, do all that. Well, yeah, anywhere else, they could have had, you know, 80, 90, 100 reception type seasons, but they had to play together. They had to split the, you know, the time with the ball. Now, the thing about it that really just blows me away is if you look at the top 15 receivers in years past, like a Marvin Harrison that was back, you know, at the tail end of my career, he was 6 foot, 200 pounds, maybe 190. Well, his son, Marvin Harrison Jr., he's 6'3", 220. Well, same thing with these receivers from Texas. Xavier Worthy, 6'2.5", 228. And Adani Mitchell, who's almost 6'4", 230 pounds, he still ran a 4.34. So, yeah, and everybody knows that Adonze, the you know, the great player, I think the Bears will and should pick him at number 9. But after that, it's going to be a free-for-all, and it's about who wants to step up and try to make one of these, you know, huge young receivers into a megastar.
Well, guys, I can tell you that number 4 on most lists is definitely number 4 on mine. That's Brian Robinson Jr., the second wide receiver from LSU. And as Dave said, I love Keon Coleman. I think he is going to be special. And Troy Franklin is another one, you know, who I think has a huge NFL career in front of him. So we'll see. Again, I've said maybe as many as 12, possibly even 13 or 14 in the first two rounds. That would be unheard of if it happens. Now, guys, on my board, and most that I've looked at, there are no running backs or safeties with first round grades. Unusual, but that's where we're at right now. Some very good prospects, but none projected in round one. So, Dan, we'll start with you this time. Of the safeties that are there, who do you think are the best and could have a shot to get taken in the first round?
Well, the other day we were talking, and Coach said that Cooper DeJean, the guy that you know, was like the all-everything corner at Iowa, possibly projects to be a better NFL safety. But all that being said, there's a player that I've got my eye on, and his name is Cole Bishop, number 8 for the University of Utah. Cole Bishop reminds me so much of years ago and a guy named Pat Tillman, a tough as nails, you know, like a mini linebacker that you could play at nickel, at monster, at weak side. You could play it either of the safety positions. Even though Cole Bishop is 6'2", 210 pounds, he still was able to clock a 4.45, which is extraordinary speed for a safety. But one of the things that I and you see it all over the league now, and we just kind of talked about it with the receivers, the corners are going to have to be bigger. And now with the proliferation of these tight ends like Brock Bowers, who's in this draft, you know, they're like Kellen Winslow's, and the safeties, they're going to have to be bigger. Have to be, you know, more physical. Cole Bishop is going to be, you know, have a very bright future, whoever picks him in this draft.
Yeah, I love, you know, I don't know much about as much about Bishop. I love the Gene. Yeah, if you make him a safety hub or a camp or a hub, just put him there day one. But the guy that I've been following for 4 years is Tyler Newbin, the kid from Minnesota. This guy played 5 years at Minnesota, and he played as a true freshman. And at 6'2", 210, this guy will hit you. And everyone says, well, Minnesota. Hey, Minnesota's, look at their defense the last 4 or 5 years. They have been a top 10 defense in college football. And, you know, the Newbin kid's got size. He's aggressive. I think he's every bit as good tackler as Winfield, you know, who came out of Minnesota and obviously he's a star now for Tampa Bay. So I really like him. And then there's a kid, this Kyrie Jackson out of Oregon. He's a junior college transfer. The guy's kind of freakish. 6'4", 195, and ran a 4.5. And people were talking about him as maybe like a sleeper guy because they don't much about him. He came from a junior college. But you talk about range. You talk about ball skills, toughness. Keep an eye on him out of Oregon, Tyree Jackson.
Guys, I've got two guys. Cole Bishop is somebody that I've been on for a while now, and he is my number one safety. And I think we'll go somewhere between, you know, 28 and 32 for exactly the reasons that Hamp mentioned. You get a safety at 6'2", 210, a 4'4", 40, and he is nasty too. And the other guy that I like is Carmen Kinchins. And this is more interesting. I don't have as many technicals to give you, but he played at Miami. And I just really like Miami defensive backs the last couple of years. You look at the players that are coming out of that school, you know, at that spot, and they've been really good. Kinchins, really good college safety, and I think a chance to be the first safety off the board in this draft. Now, you know, when we get to the running backs, we thought NFL teams had written off using high picks on running backs or giving them big money contracts. But Bijan Robinson went 8th and Jamar Gibbs went 12th last year. And then Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, DeAndre Swift, Tony Pollard all got big money contracts in free agency. So you wonder, well, what happened all of a sudden? Well, one of the reasons for those big free agency deals is this year's draft class is really weak at the position. There's a couple guys that are going to be pretty good, but it's not a deep group. And so there are no running backs with a first-round grade, but there's still talent. And, Dave, I wonder, you know, who'd be your first couple off the board?
Well, you know, I think everybody, because of the notoriety in the team, everyone knows Blake Corum. And Blake Corum is probably being undervalued, in my opinion. And the biggest knock on Blake is not his running ability, not his toughness. You know, will he? He's 5'8". Will he be durable enough in pass protection? It's a throwing league now, and they're not teams don't run it like Michigan did. And so the question is, will he be durable enough to hold up in the pass protection? And you know, they used Edwards. They took him out. Michigan did in third down and put Edwards in and threw him the ball, you know, almost as much or more than they did Blake Corum, you know, trying to get both guys playing time. But, you know, that bothered me a little bit. But I think he can do it. He's going to make a team. But I tell you, the guy that – and he made that freak list to start the season. And there's a guy that's Breland Allen out of Wisconsin. Now, think about this, guys. This guy is 6'4", and he has 195 pounds. This guy, 6'4", 235 pounds, and he ran a 4.440 at Wisconsin. Now, he's had two or three different offensive coordinators. He did have one injury. But if a team wants to run the ball, if they want a team that can make a yard, 2 yards, and he's got good hands, I mean, the guy can catch, he can move, he's a good player. I mean, I would take a shot at this guy because he's different. He's different than most normal backs.
One of the things, and again, as you just so aptly described, Coach, the league is essentially in a transition, and it's going from a 35-40 rush a game to a, you know, 16 to 18 rushes a game. So the actual running back skills set may be waning, but a player that really piques my interest because of where he might be a year or three from now is Jalen Wright. And that is the you know, the super five-star recruit back from the Tennessee Volunteers that never really had everything kind of come together for him. So much of the time, you know, who was that running back that the Steelers had 4 or 5 years ago that would stop in the hole and wait for the blocking to kind of, you know, mature, and then he'd take off again. And I kind of think it was a little bit of a fad, but to me, that's what Jalen Wright looks like. It looks like he's not willing to hit the seam. And we all know that's, you know, that's a huge part of being a running back. You were talking about Blake Corum. That's the best thing he does. He's reckless, and he hits the seam like Pacheco does, you know, for the Chiefs. But Jalen Wright, despite this one major flaw, he has all the attributes, the great speed, the great, you know, body control. And he is a fantastic receiver out of the backfield. But not only that, his blocking, his pass blocking, pass pro is as good as anybody in the league today. So Jalen Wright would be a very interesting. And, you know, I know that the Packers, you know, they made the, you know, the moves and got Josh Jacobs. But Jalen Wright, with that offense that LaFleur has that is so deadly, especially with a gifted quarterback getting the ball out in rhythm on time, Jalen Wright would be a player that you could, you know, take a little bit of a gamble on, not knowing, you know, that he's going to be the guy that you'd hand the ball off to 20 times a game. But in a year or two, he could be so very valuable, especially in the passing game.
Guys, Corum has been one of the best running backs in college football for the last 2 years. But I just don't see him in the first round, although the 61 touchdowns he scored at Michigan may get him into the first round. The guy that I like the best in this draft is Trey Benson from Florida State. This kid is 216 pounds and runs a 4.35 40, and just a big play waiting to happen. And I think just has a few more tools maybe than Corum, and that may make Benson, you know, the first running back to go in this draft. Now, guys, we'll have our mock draft next week. But before we wrap up this week, Dan, what's most on your mind? What's going on right now in the NFL that you wanted to touch base on this week?
I was digging through some of the numbers. And, you know, we started off this podcast last week. Everybody's talking about quarterbacks. It's always the quarterback. It's always the quarterback. And why? We know why. It's the most important position in all of sports. But all that being said, and I mentioned it the other day to you guys, but in the last 10 years, the college ranks, obviously, you know, with the Final Four, they've had 30 different quarterbacks lead their teams to the Final Four, you know, competition at the end of the season for the national championship. And those guys – you know, and you'd think, okay, well, if you know, lead your team to being one of the top four teams in the nation, that you're hands down a first-round draft pick. No, there's only been 12 of those 30 become first-round draft picks. And I was looking at another stat that said, you know, of the last 58 years or whatever it is since the Super Bowl actually started, that only four players, not named Manning, that would be, of course, Peyton and Eli, only four players, not named Manning, led their teams to a Super Bowl win. So everybody thinks the first overall pick, the Caleb Williams of this year's draft, that he will be, you know, hands down, the, you know, just an automatic, you know, great player and leader. And it won't be long, and the Bears will be winning Super Bowl after Super Bowl, and it just doesn't work that way. But all that being said, and I said this earlier in the year on the podcast, all that being said, I'm not sure that Drake May will even start in the NFL. I've watched a lot of his – I'm not impressed. Bo Nix, he could be another Brock Purdy, and if he finds the right spot. But Caleb Williams is the closest thing I have seen – do you know who in Kansas City? And all that being said, the more film, the more tape, the more breakdowns, I just got to tell you, it's as a former Bear, and Dave, you obviously still have, you know, a lot of, you know, ties to the franchise. Could this finally be it? Because think about it. They traded up to get Justin Fields. That didn't work out. They traded the world up to get Mitch Trubisky, that blew up on them. They had Rex Grossman, and Jay Cutler. They traded away two or three number one pick. Could this be possibly the year that, you know, it's not a booby prize for the Bears? That's what has me just, you know, unbelievable. Because we all know the quarterback position has been the headstone of the Bears organization for over 100 years.
Yeah, I'll make my point, Hub, pretty quick. I know we're running out of time here. Mine is, you know, Minnesota's sitting there without a quarterback. So is the Patriots. So is Washington. We know that. And is Minnesota going to overpay way too much for Drake May or J.J. McCarthy? They don't have a quarterback. They got Sam Darnold. They could go with him. But, you know, they're going to have to give the 11th and probably the 23rd. And now are they going to have to give more than that, which would be way, in my opinion, you're paying way too much, but they're boxed in. Are they going to do it or are they not? Let's wait and see.
All right, folks. Unfortunately, we're running a little short on time. We've had some technical difficulties this week, so we're going to have to cut off. But next week, we are going to give you, I think, some of the best coverage you're going to get anywhere on the NFL college draft. And so for now, we hope you all just have a great weekend. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today, and we'll look forward to visiting with you all again next week.